The following is an encore episode of Hour 1 of the Turley Frequency with host Kevin Turley. We hope you enjoy.
You've tuned to the Turley Frequency, starring your host, Kevin Turley, with guest stars Mike Romano and Reed Hodges, and special guest stars, the members of the FCC, whom we respect respectfully. Now, time to get tuned into the frequency. Call the show at 888-928-0881. That's 888-928-0881. Or text us at 251-928-2111. And now we cross live to the Archangel Radio Studios in downtown Fairhope to at last feel the Turley Frequency.
Welcome to Tuesday's edition of the Turley Frequency, here live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. Today on the show, we meet Dr. Gad Saad, author of a new book with a name like that. What's he going to be speaking about? Well, of course, it's going to be about happiness. Dr. Saad will be speaking to us on the subject and the secrets of happiness in the next segment. Top of the hour, we pray the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and you're invited to join us. Feel free to text me your prayer requests on 251-928-2111. The lines are open for you right now. In the final segment today, we conclude the story of a woman who, through the protection of the Rosary, survived the horrific genocide in Rwanda back in the 1990s. Okay, with all this good stuff, I guess we'd better get this show on the road. Hello and welcome back to the latest installment of the Turley Frequency. I almost said Friday's edition because it almost feels like a Friday. It's been a long week and it's only Tuesday. Listen, it's so good to have your company. And it's the 1st of August today. We are into August. Now, I did a lot of July, a month dedicated to the precious blood. What's August dedicated to? Call me and tell me. 888-928-0881. First caller gets a prize. Or text me, 251-928-2111. Let's see if there's anybody out there. Let's find out, what is August, or who is August dedicated to? There's a clue there. Now, while you're mulling over that subject, or quickly reaching for your smartphone, your computer, your tablet, and working it out, can I ask you a personal question? Now, don't worry, there's only me and you here, so don't worry about it. I want to know how you're feeling. The show today is all about happiness. Yeah, happiness. Now, some of you might say, well, this show's always about happiness. And of course, you would be wrong. We do everything on this show. But today, we are looking at the subject, the topic, the research area, even with Dr. Saad, of what is happiness. Now, you could say that, you know, how many times have you heard it? You must have had it in conversations. I've certainly had it in conversations, especially with younger people. You say to them, what do you want out of life? Or what do you want to become in life? Or what do you want to do with your life? Do you remember those questions when you were younger? And often young people will reply very simplistically with something like, I just want to be happy. Or parents sometimes, I've noticed this as well, it's an increasing trend. They'll say, I don't mind as long as he's happy. I don't care what she does as long as she's happy. Happy is that sort of preeminent human desire. We all want to be happy. Let's be honest. We all want to be happy. Who wants to be sad? No offense to Dr. Saad, but who wants to be sad? Who wants to be unhappy? Everybody wants to be happy. So happiness is the subject of our guest's book and also what we'll be talking about in the next segment. But it's got me thinking a little bit about one aspect of that. Now, we'll talk about the more theoretical aspects of happiness in the next segment. We may even touch on some of the theological and philosophical ideas around happiness later in the show, after you've had your coffee. But I was going to talk about something which is very, very sort of topical in a different way, and that is the subject of vacations. Now, we've had a number of people on the show who are on vacation. Do you remember our prayer warriors yesterday? We had Harris and Davis. They're on vacation from school. And Jennifer and the family had been off on a vacation. I forgot to ask them where they'd been, but they'd been off on a vacation, visiting people, doing whatever they do. Everybody's vacations are slightly different. But it's that time of year, right? It's that time of year when people look forward to having a break. You call it vacations in the States. We call it holidays over here. People go on their holidays or their vacations, or vacances, as they call them in French. Everybody looks forward to this. Everybody has a certain ritual to this. And certain families over the years have developed certain rituals. There's certain places they always go to. And there's certain ways that the families always interact, or they have other families with them, etc., etc. There's all sorts of stuff that's added into this time of year. In fact, one of the pieces of research I saw recently was that as you get older, you tend to narrow your vacation options. Did you know this? That you tend to go to the same place as you get older more and more, tend to do exactly the same thing, which I see as a sign of the wisdom of getting older, because you know what you don't want to do anymore and you know exactly what you do want to do. And I may come back to what my ideal holiday would be in a moment. But here in the UK, vacations and holidays at this time of year, they are not relaxing. They are not relaxing. Let me explain what I mean by that. I did a quick search online, just putting in the words holiday hell. It's British search engines, holiday hell. And a huge number of newspaper stories come up. And I'm not surprised, because every time I turn on the radio, there's some horror story from normally a British tourist trapped somewhere in Europe. Now, they're trapped for a number of reasons. Europe has been hit, as you know, as has parts of the United States, by wildfires. And certainly islands in Greece and other places have suffered with really quite significant wildfires. And this has sent the tourists from Britain and elsewhere screaming and running to the airports to get home as quickly as they can. So that's a little bit of a freak episode, but it's not unusual. There's always some kind of climatal sort of impact on people's holidays these days, be it air pollution or forest fires or whatever it happens to be. But then there's the whole raft of other stories which are really quite commonplace and which do happen all year round, I'm afraid, and are often to do with people going on vacation. And it's always to do with luggage being lost, my trip being ruined. You know, that the hotel was not as it was advertised. The airline made our trip back a living hell. The airline on the trip out made our children cry. You know, all these stories, people fighting at airports, people fighting over seats on the plane before they even get to the vacation spot. Now, the UK in particular has created a rod for its own back. And let me explain a little bit what I mean by that. You've heard of something called Brexit, okay? Brexit, the referendum that happened back in 2016, and the UK voted to leave the European Union. So what, I hear you cry. Well, Europe up until that, the European Union, which the UK was part of, travel was relatively straightforward. It was as straightforward as traveling between the states and in the United States. You know, if you wanted to go on a plane, you needed some sort of photo ID, but it was no big deal. And you got off the other end. There was no customs. There was no immigration. It was one large travel area, right? Well, thanks to Brexit, all that has changed and everything is much more complicated. So there are large queues or lineups, as you would call them, at the various airports. And people are a bit disgruntled. They're taking forever to get through the immigration checks at the various holiday destinations, which before they just breezed through. Now, you can imagine if you had three or four children with you and everybody's had a rotten flight and you're lining up for hours to try to get through the immigration and then the same on the way home. Oh. And then when you get there, the hotel's no good. They've lost your luggage and there's a wildfire. And this is your annual vacation, which you have paid a lot of thousands and thousands of dollars to go on. Because that's the other thing about the UK. Most people want to go abroad because the weather in the UK is just so unpredictable. They may talk all the time about climate change on the BBC, but this summer has been, in the great English expression, a washout. It has been raining almost all the time. Now, we did have a little bit of heat in June, and that caused various news outlets to have apocalyptic storylines about we were all going to fry to death. And then the rain came and we've had nothing but rain, wind and autumnal weather. Weather like you get in the fall, early winter. You know, we're putting on jackets and trying to stay warm in the evening. And this is the summer. This is the height of summer, right? July, August. It's the height of the summer in this country. This time last year, we had temperatures of 100 degrees. So it was really kind of weird and crazy weather. But the problem is it's unpredictable. And that's why people decide to go abroad. But remember, Britain is an island. So you've either got to go by boat, fly, or the underground train that goes between London, Paris, London, Brussels. You've got to leave the jurisdiction. It's effort. It's not just driving for a bit. So all of this adds to that sense of a real effort. Going on holiday is a real effort. Now, this leads me to what I saw this morning, which I really, really liked for reasons that I will come to hopefully by the end of this. And it was an article in the New York Times just published either this morning or relatively recently. And it says how to make a staycation feel like an actual break. Now, you probably know staycation is one of these made-up words, which is all about instead of going on a vacation, going away somewhere, you literally stay at home and you have a staycation. Music to my ears. I like the idea of a staycation. But this article is much more interesting because it says that it's really about your mental attitude. And I thought that's interesting. The strapline of the article says a mental flip can help make your time off more restorative, even if you're not traveling very far. And for all the reasons I've just said, I'm surprised that staycations are not more popular in the UK at the moment. Now, the United States is different. You have a vast continent in which you can travel relatively straightforwardly. And you also have on your doorstep, I mean, wonderful sort of resources and beaches and mountains and all sorts of things. So it's not the same sort of thing. Just imagine if to go on vacation, you always had to fly down to South America or something. It's that kind of feeling, right, when you go on a vacation from the UK. Anyway, this article was very, very interesting. It's first of all noted that American workers are notoriously lousy at taking time off. A recent survey by the Pew Research Center found that 46% of employees with paid time off did not use all their allotted days. I find that incredible. But anyway, that's understandable. That's the kind of culture that has come up, especially in the United States. There's a little bit of it here. It's not so much here, but there is that idea that somehow it's better to be working. But all indications, all psychological studies would seem to suggest that a vacation is a good thing. It's a very good thing to down tools for a while, to just take time out. Do something different. You know the old adage, change is as good as a rest, all of that sort of stuff. So there's a whole battery of stuff about how good vacations are for us physically, because we often sleep more and exercise more and all of that sort of good stuff. But also then sometimes we eat better. Our lives are more balanced. We spend more time with the significant individuals or family that we have around us. Quality time, I think, is the expression that's used. These things are important to us, so they help our psychological well-being, our emotional well-being, and if we go to the right place with the right disposition, our spiritual well-being, because maybe we have more time for prayer, for study, to read creatively, recharge the batteries. So this article was really a little very interesting study, because there had been a sort of test of people who went on vacation as opposed to people who stayed home, and they were testing the psychological impact of both, and it was really, really interesting, because it found that the people that stayed at home on the stay vacation were just as happy, if not more so, because they had avoided all the stress and all the tension of travel. Now, stress and tension is inherent in modern travel. I can remember a time when travel on planes, you would turn up at an airport, show your passport or show identification, jump on a plane and off you went. Security checks were rudimentary. This was before 9/11. After 9/11, everything changed. And suddenly we were in this world of endless hour-long checks and very, very long lineups outside airports with people going through security and having to take off belts and shoes and all the rest of it. Okay, there was a time before that. There was a time before that. And it was definitely less stressful. So the people that avoided all this travel, avoided all the disruption to their lives, they actually found it much more restful. Who knew? But there had to be something else which was necessary to make the staycation work. Okay? And what they found was that it was in the mindset of the people having the staycation. Now, you can try that this idea this weekend, because this is the idea that they're playing with. If this weekend you said to yourself, it's just a normal weekend, we're going to do the normal things, it's just a weekend, what you get is just a weekend. If you say to yourself, this weekend is a staycation, we're going to do something special, we're going to do something different. Now, what that might mean is, again, not going places, not doing anything extraordinary, but sometimes just enhancing the ordinary. So, for example, there was this wonderful example of this man who and his wife, and they decided to cook a certain cuisine that weekend. So I don't know whether it was Italian or French or whatever, but they decided to turn the weekend into something special aimed around these food dishes. I like this idea. I like the idea that you can have as restful a time in your own home as you can sitting in a hotel paying through the nose. I like that idea. But here's the thing. It made me think a little bit more about our whole attitude to Sundays and to the Sabbath. We Christians have a kind of built-in staycation, vacation, every single week. It's called Sunday. Go back to the article. Maybe it's about our mindset. Do we really see it as a special day? Do we really see it as the day that the Lord rested, was recreated, and we sort of enter into that spirit of recreation? Is that how we really see Sundays? Or do we see it just as another day? There'll be less people at the supermarket. Yes, we go to church, but then we've got to get on with our chores. I think there's something in staycations, but I think there's something in a spiritual staycation each week on a Sunday. And maybe during the week we'll talk a little bit more about this, because I've been exploring a little bit how, for example, ultra-Orthodox Jews live the Sabbath, or the Shabbos, I think they call it. It's really interesting. It's really interesting the intense way in which they live that, in the sense of doing nothing as a way of giving glory to God. And doing nothing is something which I find very attractive most of the time. But especially on Sundays. So during the week, we might have a little thought of that. Now, Happiness is the theme of the show. We need to have our vacations. We need to have vacations because they hopefully will make us happier people. But here's the question. Everybody's different. And the way in which you recreate the way in which you have that vacation may be very different for you than it is for me. And that's what we have to find out. Okay, listen, when we come back, we are talking to Dr. Saad. If you have any questions for him, do feel free to call in on 888-928-0881 or text me on 251-928-2111. If you want to know what is happiness or how to be happy, now's your time to ask. Stay tuned to the Turley Frequency here live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. Turley Frequency here, live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. I hope your Tuesday is very, very happy. How happy are you feeling this morning? Are you feeling happier after our brief monologue this morning here on the show? I hope so, because we all want to be happy, right? And we're just about to meet an expert in the psychology of happiness. Happiness, as you know, is one of the defining characteristics of what it means to be human. Human beings are either happy or sad. Most animals aren't. They just are what they are. Dogs, cats, chihuahuas, Bigfoot. They're just what they are, right? Philosophers have mused upon the subject of happiness down through the ages. Pagan philosophers, Christian philosophers, secular philosophers, modernist philosophers. Happiness is one of those perennials in the school of philosophy. But so too have writers and subjects from different disciplines. Everybody is interested in the theme of, they call it different names. Sometimes they call it fulfillment or satisfaction. There's different names for it. But it's basically that idea of well-being, happiness, well-being. That's another modern jargonistic name that's dedicated to the concept of happiness. Now, we're Christians and we believe what's written in the Holy Scriptures. And the Bible has lots to say about the subject of happiness. Or does it? Well, I would say it has interesting things to say about what it is to be happy. Now, we have to be a little bit careful. We've said this before in this show. We work in the world of translations of the Bible. The Bible was not written in English, contrary to what certainly some Englishmen think. It was written in Hebrew, Greek, parts of it in Aramaic. And the word happy, as we understand it in English, may not be the best translation for certain passages. I'll give you a very, very quick example. The Beatitudes. Modern translations often talk about happy are those that, you know the rest. Older translations sometimes say blessed. Blessed are those that. And yet the truth is probably somewhere in between. But in the English language, we fall in the middle a little bit. There is an element of blessing. There's also an element of fulfillment, of joy, perhaps. Joyful are those that would be X, Y, or Z. Because on the face of it, much of which is what's in the Beatitudes, appears at least, if you weren't a Christian, paradoxical. Happy are those who thirst for justice. How does that work? Happy are you when people insult you and abuse you and you know the rest. Doesn't quite work, does it? So the Christian idea of happiness, or to be probably more correct, the idea of joyfulness, Christian joy, is not the same as the secular notion of happiness. And that's one of the things that I'm looking forward to talking to our guest about. We have a slightly different worldview to the rest of the universe. Now, I'll introduce, we're just waiting on our guest to connect. We will do in just a moment. So while we're waiting for him, I will just briefly introduce him to you. My next guest, Dr. Saad. Yes, I know. I was going to say to him, and I will say to him when he comes on, it's a brilliant marketing ploy to have a Dr. Saad writing about happiness. And then I discovered that he is a professor of marketing. So make of that what you will. But he's made a study of happiness and come up with the 8 secret ways to find happiness. 8 secret ways, or 8 secrets in the pursuit of happiness. Now, I have to say, having worked a little bit in the world of books, I know how authors and publishers can come up with words like secret, hidden. You know, you can find the secret of life. You can find the hidden meaning of whatever, you know, and it's very attractive. But actually, sometimes these secrets, these hidden meanings have been around for a long time. So his name is Dr. Gad Saad, and he is the host. I think he's based in Canada, and he's the host of a popular YouTube channel, which is called The Saad Truth. Again, wonderful piece of marketing there, The Saad Truth. But he's also a blogger for Psychology Today and, as I say, professor of marketing at the John Molson School of Business, which resides at Concordia University. Now, as you'd imagine, he is the author of many books, including The Evolutionary Basis of Consumption, The Consuming Instinct, numerous scientific papers, and the national bestseller, The Parasitic Mind. Now, his latest book is published by Regnery and has just been released, published in the United States in June. I think it's coming out in the UK in September. And it has the title, The Saad Truth About Happiness, 8 Secrets for Leading the Good Life. And I believe we have now connected with our guest. So it gives me great delight to say, Dr. Saad, welcome to the Turley Frequency.
Oh, it's great to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Now, Dr. Saad, I know you're a professor of marketing, but it is marketing genius to have somebody with your surname writing about happiness.
Indeed. So for the people who did not understand the play on words, my last name is Saad, S-A-A-D. But interestingly, what you may not know is that Saad, or the proper pronunciation in Arabic is Saad, it has a guttural sound, that's means right. Happiness and felicity in Arabic, so I was destined to write this book.
It gets even better, doesn't it, you know? Dr. Saad, brackets, translation, happiness, writing about happiness. Now, I'm fascinated by this sort of subject, as I believe probably all people are. I mean, is that your understanding, Dr. Gad, that most people are fascinated about the subject of happiness and how to find it?
Indeed. I mean, when you ask people what is their ultimate life goal, the great majority will give us their number one answer to be happy. And that is supported by the fact that out of all topics that philosophers, thinkers, theologians have written about through the millennia, arguably the number one topic is how to live the good life. So it's not as though I'm treading on new ground by tackling the topic of happiness, but rather I think what I hope people will agree what is unique about this book is that it's a mixture of my personal experiences coupled with ancient wisdoms and backed up by contemporary science. Put those three together and hopefully you have a fun book to read.
Now, you and I have a shared piece of history. You probably don't realize this because I was very interested to learn that you grew up in war-torn Lebanon, probably in the 1970s. Is that correct?
Exactly. Exactly.
And I grew up in war-torn Belfast in the 1970s. So we both survived and we've come through it. So I was fascinated that that was the crucible for your ongoing researches and your ongoing quest for happiness. Was that because during your childhood, you did feel that this was a very sad, very depressing time?
Well, yeah, exactly. And it has allowed me to contextualize anything that gets me down in a given day. I can always go back to, you know, the deep recesses of my mind and say, wait a minute, you're whining because you have a lot of pressure because you're going on a media tour because your latest book has been released and you're feeling stressed. Why don't you be happy that you miraculously escaped the Middle East in a 1 to 1 million odds, right? So by having gone through difficult periods, it allows us to have a thicker skin. Or to put it in the language of, you know, one of the later chapters in my book, I have a chapter titled On Persistence and the Anti-Fragility of Failure. Anti-fragility is a wonderful concept because it basically says that for a system to optimally function, it has to be exposed to stressors, right? If it's too brittle and it breaks, then that's not a good thing for the system to have, right? So Seneca, the ancient mm-hmm. Stoic, talks about that, you know, strong trees that have deep roots have to be exposed to wind stressors. If they're not, then they become too brittle and they break very easily. Well, having gone through the Lebanese Civil War and having, in your case, gone through the difficulties that you went through in Ireland, allows us to build that anti-fragile mindset. In other words, squeaky doors don't break. Now, of course, the stressor should not kill you, but short of that, you know, pick yourself up, get back on the proverbial horse, and overcome your story of victimhood rather than wallow in it.
I couldn't agree more with you. Absolutely. And certainly that's my experience. You just got to get on with it. And, you know, every day is a new challenge, but every day is a wonderful new gift, especially if you've lived in a climate where you didn't know you were going to get another day. But that's a whole exactly. different program for another day. Now, listen, you've got the 8 secrets. I mean, I love this. Now, I know you're a marketing genius. You realize that, Dr. Garrett, because, you know, any book with secrets in it, you want to pick it up and say, well, tell me the secret, you know. No matter what culture you're in, everybody loves to know a secret. If somebody comes up to you on the street and says, can I tell you a secret? You're immediately into what do you mean? What do you mean? So 8 secrets for leading the good life. Where would you like to start?
Well, we could start, if you'd like, with one of the early chapters. I talk about the two key life decisions that will either impart great happiness or deep misery. So we can start with that, and then we can talk about some of the other mindsets if we have time.
That sounds like a plan. You take it away.
Okay, so in that chapter, I basically argue that choosing the right life partner and the ideal job, you know, is really your ticket to happiness, to the extent that there are certain, you know, criteria that you could use in making those choices. You could never be assured that you're going to make the right choice, but are there some maxims that I can follow that increase my probability of finding the right life partner, finding the right job? And I argue a resounding yes. So let's start with life partner. So in evolutionary psychology, we have two opposing maxims. There's the maxims of, you know, choose someone who is opposite from you, opposites attract, versus the other maxim, which is birds of a feather flock together. Now, if you are interested in the long-term stability of a union, of your marriage, then the research shows that it is overwhelmingly the case that birds of a feather flock together is the operative maxim that you should pursue. Now, the question is, what you want to match on which attributes? And of course, it's not on, you know, your eye color or your hair color. It's on shared life goals, shared yes. belief systems, shared values. If I am very, very religious and I'd like to, you know, be a practicing, you know, whatever, Jew, Catholic, whatever, and you are, you know, a staunch caustic atheist, well, it doesn't take a fancy scientist to know that we're already starting off on the wrong foot. So choosing someone with whom you share those values is certainly going to greatly increase your chances of happiness. Now, when it comes to your ideal job, to the extent that it's possible to instantiate what I'm about to say, there are two things that you need to try to achieve. Number one, I argue that a job that allows you to instantiate your creative impulse is going to give you, you know, a direct pathway to having purpose and meaning. So a chef, an architect, a podcaster, a stand-up comic, a professor, an author, each of these people are doing completely different jobs, but they are all immersed in creation, right? Until the stand-up comic came up with the routine that he came up with, we didn't have that routine. Until the chef came up with this beautiful dish that you and I are now enjoying at dinner, that dish did not exist. Same thing for my book and so on. So there is something that is quite mystical about the creative process. So to the extent that you can immerse yourself in that, do it. The second...
Dr. Gadd, I mean, you know, you've taken a number of examples there, which are probably the first that come to mind. Absolutely. But no matter what your work is, it can be equally infused, I guess, with a certain creativity and a certain pleasurable in being an expert, whether you're sweeping the streets or whether you're serving in a restaurant or whatever it happens to be, as long as it's done with a certain joie de vivre, a certain spirit, that's what animates it, right? And makes it worthwhile and satisfying.
Oh, that's a beautiful point to make, because I often then get But what if I'm an insurance adjuster? What if I'm a bus driver? So to your point, I often tell the story of, I think I was coming back from Albany to Ithaca, New York. I did my PhD at Cornell, which is in Ithaca, New York, central New York.
Sure.
And I was sitting on the bus. I think it was maybe a 2-3 hour bus ride. And, being someone who's very, open and, quite extroverted, I started chatting with the bus driver, and we had this incredibly intimate, 2-3 hour conversation, at the end of which a lady came up and said, I just want to tell you, I couldn't help but overhear you two gentlemen speak. And it warmed my heart to see two random strangers engage in this, spontaneous conversation. Now contrast that to another bus driver who's sullen, who views his job as nothing but taking people from A to B, who's not open to having conversations with the people that he is transporting from A to B. You end up with a completely different job, even though you're both bus drivers. So you're exactly right. Any job that you do, that is an honest, dignified job, we can infuse it with creativity, with purpose, with an attitude of playfulness. But if I could come back to the second point, so I said, number one, try to instantiate, your creative impulse. The second one, I argue, again, to the extent that it's possible, is to have a job that grants you temporal freedom. Now, what I mean by that is, take, for example, my own profession. I worked very, very hard. I worked very long hours, but I set my schedule. I can work till 4 a.m. on the next exciting paper that I'm working on. I could wake up at 10 a.m. I could then head off to a cafe. By not having every single minute of my day mandated by someone else, as might be the case for the bus driver, then I feel a great sense of freedom, even though I'm always tied to my work. So if you can hit those two markers, creativity and temporal freedom, you're well on your way to professional happiness.
Absolutely. And but then again, I mean, you've studied psychology, Dr. Gadd. I mean, there are certain people who, and I'm in the same boat as you. I love that idea of the freedom of being creative at whatever time the muse descends. But I have met people who really do like those kind of strict parameters,
yes,
within which to engage, and they need them. Otherwise, they tend to fall apart. Have you met these individuals?
Yeah, and I've met some of them. They're called my graduate students, right? I mean, one of the things that happens with graduate students, if they're writing a master's thesis or certainly a doctoral dissertation, is that it's the first time that they are now tasked with creating their own output, right? So far, they've been students. They've learned material. They've been tested on that material. And hopefully they do well and they go on to the next step. And so what happens often with some students is that they really flounder because they don't have the structure of someone telling them, here's what you have to study, here's what you have to do well. It is now, the onus is on you to be entrepreneurial. So I completely agree that for some people, they need the structure of being a bus driver, and that's perfectly fine. As I said, every job that's honest has dignity in it. But even the bus driver who may need the structure of being told, you're going to do this route and you're going to work from 8 to 4, even that person probably has some deep desire for some creative pursuit. Let's suppose that driver loves ceramics. Well, after you finish your route, your bus route, instead of going and watching passively TV for the next 4 hours, why don't you sign up at the Adult Life Learning Center and take that ceramics course that you've always dreamt of taking? So we can infuse ourselves with creativity. We could be immersed in play, even if it's not in our job. Now, if you can get it at your job, then you're luckier. But the fact that you're a bus driver doesn't mean that you can't be a creative person.
Now, Dr. Gadd, that bus drivers have to stick to their schedule, and so do talk show hosts, I'm afraid. So we're going to have to go for a break. I'm finding this conversation so fascinating, I wasn't watching the clock. We're going to have to go for a break. We're in conversation with Dr. Saad about happiness, and we'll be back straight after these words. Stay tuned to the Turley Frequency here live and exclusive on Archangel Video. Welcome back to the Turley Frequency here live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. I'm in a fascinating discussion this morning with Professor Gad Saad, who is the author, The Definitive Guide to the Sad Truth About Happiness, 8 Secrets for Leading the Good Life. Now, just during the break, Professor, I was thinking about the title of your book and the good life. And the good life, as you know, many philosophers have mused on what the good life is, but it's very subjective. And it's also something which changes. What's the good life when I was 16 is not the good life when I'm a mature adult. So who did you write this book for?
Well, I mean, everyone in the sense that, so take for example, regret. So regret is something that, you know, when we're sitting on our proverbial porch, you know, when we're 85 years old, looking back on our life, we don't want to be haunted by, you know, the looming regrets of the roads not taken, right? So there's this wonderful research by one of my former professors in my PhD who looked at two types of regrets. Regrets due to action, right? I regret that I cheated on my wife and now my marriage is over, versus regrets due to inaction. I regret that I never pursued my interest in art and I became an accountant. I hate accounting. Well, now imagine you're 17 years old and you're trying to decide what should be my future pathway in life. Well, there is a mechanism called anticipatory regret, which is the idea that you should make decisions that will hopefully anticipate you being haunted by future regrets. So when you're 18 and your dad says, hey, the market is really good for studying, computer security, you should go into that. Your thought process should be, well, wait a minute, but am I passionate about computer security? Is this something that at 55 years old, I'll wake up and then suffer a midlife crisis because I hate all things technological? So I think there are lessons that can be gleaned by everyone. So let me now give you the other end of the story, someone who is 80-something years old mm-hmm. and who did do something about their regrets. So there is a gentleman that I had on my show recently. His name is Manfred Steinem. I can't remember his last name. Anyways, he got his MD degree when he was 1955 in Vienna. And then he picked up a PhD in 1967 as part of his training as a hematologist, a medical specialist. But his love had always been physics, but his parents had said to him, do something practical, become a physician. Well, imagine that in his late 80s, after having had a full career as a medical doctor, he decided to pursue physics and got a PhD in physics at the age of 89 at Brown University. So everyone could benefit from the lessons that I discuss in the book, from your teenage daughter or son to your elderly grandparent.
You know, one of the things as I've got older, Professor Gad, which is quite terrifying when you think about it, is the realization that each of us, to some extent, as much as we have agency, we choose to be unhappy or happy. We choose to be fulfilled. I'm thinking more in our creative, in our working lives. We choose to be fulfilled or we choose a safe route, which somebody else has designed, which is a kind of open casket.
100%. So let me put that in a behavioral genetics framework. So researchers have found that roughly 50% of the difference between individuals in terms of their happiness comes from their disposition, meaning genetically speaking, some of us have sunny dispositions, some of us have more cloudy, sullen dispositions. But the good news there is that still leaves 50% up for grabs, right? So that means even if I may start off with a sunnier disposition than you, if you implement choices in your life and adopt mindsets that, you know, will allow you to climb Mount Happiness in an easier way, you might end up at a happier point in your life than even though I started with a sunnier disposition than you. And so I think that's the empowering message in the book, is that yes, part of our happiness is inscribed in our genes, but so much of it, as you said, is personal agency, right? So to our earlier point, I could have wallowed my whole life in the fact that we lived some very, very difficult moments in Lebanon, or I could say, no, I'm going to live my, you know, a life well lived, as the expression says, is the best revenge. And so succeeding at the game of life, you know, winning the World Cup of life is what ultimately brings me happiness, despite the bad start in my early childhood.
Well, it might even go further, because again, I'm tracking you with my own personal history. Maybe because of that start, you have grabbed life with both hands.
Exactly. So, you know, anti-fragility, that concept of, you know, overcoming something that is a big stressor is so important to this conversation. So in The Parasitic Mind, my earlier book, I talk about how, you know, our universities now are creating students who are very fragile because they can't even weather the possibility of being exposed to opposing viewpoints, which is exactly what you would expect someone to be in terms of an anti-fragile mindset, right? I have to be able to hear what you have to say, even though it's perfectly different from mine, and hopefully offer better arguments. So having faced the stressor of my Lebanese civil war childhood has only made me stronger. And I'll just, if I can mention just the story that happened just very recently.
Sure.
Last week, I was on Joe Rogan's podcast, and I jokingly, sarcastically, in sort of the bombastic, humorous way that I sometimes style that I use, I said, well, you know, of all accents, we were talking about linguistic accents. I said, well, Quebec French, which is, you know, I'm fully Francophone. I learned French before I did English.
Of course.
But I was making the point that Quebec French is actually quite auditorily unattractive, right? Now, if you see the kind of hate I have since received from Quebecers for simply expressing that very banal opinion, right? People find Italian to be beautiful. People find Arabic to be unattractive. Well, Arabic is my mother tongue. Yet I won't wilt away and go into an emotional hysteria and send you death threats because you don't like the way Arabic sounds. But if I showed you some of the messages I've been receiving, that's certainly not a pathway to happiness. If my making a flippant joke about your accent on Joe Rogan causes you to experience so much hatred, you probably need to be reading my book very closely.
Listen, you're talking to an Irishman who's lived all his life in London. You know, you just get on with it. You really
exactly.
do. Listen, it's so refreshing speaking to you, Professor Gadd. I wasn't quite sure how this was going to go, but your life experience has borne this wonderful fruit, which is a kind of philosophical understanding of the nuts and bolts, practical way in which we can find happiness. Now, unfortunately, our happiness has come to an end because we are coming up against the clock here. This is the tyranny of time here on a radio talk show. But before you go, just very quickly, tell people where they can find out not just where they can pick up a copy of the book, though that's important, but also where they can find out more about you, because you're involved in all sorts of wonderful media endeavors.
Sure. Thank you. So just go to GADSAAD.com, and it's a one-stop shop for all things GADSAAD. And please consider purchasing a copy of my book, The Sad Truth About Happiness. I'm sure it will be fun and engaging for you to read it.
Now, the other thing is you do podcasts and video YouTube channels as well?
Yeah, so I do have a YouTube channel, which I also put on audio podcast. It's called The Sad Truth, S-A-A-D. I invite guests for long-form conversation. I also just open up the laptop and just rant about something that might be pissing me off or making me happy. So please sign up. I think it's fun. A lot of science, a lot of philosophy, but a lot of humor.
Now, one of the things that we haven't talked about, and this is a Catholic radio station, we haven't talked about the role of spirituality, the role of religion, the role of faith in making one happy. Because I, for one, would say that I have become happier the closer I have come to God. But that's probably a discussion for another day. But we are about to pray in the next segment of the show. We have intercessory prayer. I don't know what your religious background is, but I don't need to know. We pray for everyone. And we'd like to pray for you during that 30-minute segment. Is there anything in particular that's on your mind, on your heart, that you would like us to lift up to God in the next 30 minutes and ask for prayers for you?
What a lovely gesture. That's very kind of you. Just that hopefully myself and my family continue to have health, love, and happiness. And that's it. If I've got those, then I can handle everything else that is thrown at me. So thank you very much for that lovely spiritual gesture.
Professor Gadd Saad, it has been an absolute pleasure to have you on the Turley Frequency. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again.
Anytime. Thank you so much, sir.
That is great. Okay, listen, we are going to be talking a different form of happiness because we are going to be talking the divine mercy in the next segment. Stay tuned to the Turley Frequency here live and exclusive on Archangel Radio.